Buckle up and strap in. The Windy City Roundup with Josh Hill is next on Fansided Radio Network.
That's right. Welcome into the Windy City Roundup. I am Josh Hill, editor over at PippinAin'tEasy.com, making it your number one place to go to get all the best Bulls action and Bulls news out there. PippinAin'tEasy.com. It's one of the many great fan-sided sites out there that continue to give you the best sports news and the best angle of the sports world out there. Of course, you're already on a great fan-sided site if you're listening to this. Either you're on PippinAin'tEasy.com or you're on FansidedRadio.com, brand new site to the Fansided Network. All of the best sites here at Fansided.com now have podcast accompaniment. You have an audible supplement to the wonderful news that comes out daily from all the great fan-sided sites. Fansided Radio. Why don't you go ahead and favorite that in your tab at the top of your computer screen right now, or write it down, unless you're driving, of course. I mean, you should just make a mental note. We don't need any accidents in Chicago. The traffic already is boring. Good Lord. I mean, people, they go around and they say, oh, yeah, traffic this, traffic that. But if you haven't been to Chicago, and if you haven't been to Chicago during rush hour, especially with all the construction, I mean, ever since I was growing up and coming into Chicago from Minnesota, before I made this great city my home, coming in on the Kennedy, oh my goodness, the traffic coming in to Chicago, basically in every direction, to the Eisenhower, the Kennedy, oh my Lord, it is not fun because you always have the construction. It always seems like the construction is never done. I mean, my question was, what are they doing? They moved literally at a snail's pace when it comes to the construction on the roads in Chicago, because I came in one year, they were working on a certain section of the road. It came in the next year, a full calendar year, and they have moved literally about half a mile, and that's being generous, half a mile down the road. So we don't need any more traffic in Chicago. Why don't you just jot down all these great fan-sided sites in your mind and remember it for later for when you get to the office. But the Windy City Roundup, talking about the best sports city in the country, and if you doubt me, I'd like you to call in and challenge me on that, because Chicago, is there a greater city for sports than Chicago? Because I don't think so, and I cannot think of one, and that's not just because I have hometown bias, and actually my hometown is Minnesota, so it's not even a hometown bias, it's just an honest opinion, and it's a fact that Chicago is the best sports city in the country. They may not only have winners, because we got the Cubs, and if you've ever had to watch a Chicago Cubs game, like I went to the Twins and the Cubs this weekend, three-game series in Minneapolis at Target Field, which, by the way, beautiful stadium. I've been there many times before. If you haven't been to Target Field and you're a Cubs fan, even if you're a Cubs fan, go there for a White Sox series, because at least you're representing Chicago in some fashion. It's a beautiful stadium. It really is, and I think it's one of the last new stadiums in baseball, because these series coming up for the Twins, I believe it's the first time that teams have played in Target Field. I don't think the Phillies have played at Target Field yet, and I know the Cubs hadn't. But it was really interesting, because I remember going to Wrigley Field, and I've been to Wrigley Field many times, but a couple of years ago, when the Twins came to town, to the north side of Chicago, everybody, it seemed like it was a pro-Twins stadium, because everybody was coming down from Minneapolis and Minnesota and all these great cities, to basically see one of the greatest baseball museums still standing in Wrigley Field. And you saw the exact opposite of that this weekend at Target Field, because you had Cubs fans coming in from Chicago, Cubs fans that have been imported into Minneapolis already and all over Minnesota and Wisconsin and the Dakotas. Cubs fans from everywhere. We're coming down to Target Field, and you were getting the exact same reaction that Twins fans 3 or 4 years ago heading to Wrigley Field had, where they were just in sheer awe of this stadium, because with Twins fans, they were going down to see the history. You know, the Wrigley Field, the ivy, the bricks, you know, all of this. I mean, even though, you know, the bricks are probably falling on your head at Wrigley Field, Target Field's got a little bit more stability and safety when you're watching a baseball game. But it was the same thing. It was really cool to see all these Cubs fans come out and, check out the stadium, and I was talking with them. Great, great, great time this weekend. Even though the Cubs only won one of the three games, and their bullpen, which we'll talk about in just a second, and the hitting wasn't necessarily great, but we will also talk about that. We have a firing in the Cubs clubhouse. Somebody is not coming to work today to prepare for the Detroit Tigers. We'll get to that in just a second. But it was a great scene this weekend at Target Field, watching the Cubs fans come out. And both fan bases are really, really friendly. It's not like you're getting a series against the Cardinals and the Reds, or the Cardinals and the White Sox, where you've got two really kind of almost hostile fan bases. Even though they're not hostile with each other, they're just, in general, a hostile fan base. So it was really nice to see Cubs fans come out to Minnesota and just mingle. And it was a really great weekend for baseball, too. It was a little hot. But if you love baseball, that Twins-Cubs series, even though it really didn't go the Cubs' way, was a great way to... and there were a lot of kids out there. I think Sunday was a kids' day here at Target Field. They were giving away Joe Mauer jerseys, I believe. So there was lots of kids in attendance on Sunday, which was really great to see. It's always great to see kids at a baseball game. It was a great, great weekend and a great series. Great two teams to see. Really kind of sportsmanship going on. Great for the kids to see. Awesome series. But the Cubs, sticking with them for a moment, not so hot this weekend, but they come out last night and they actually win a game. Alert the media, alert the press, the Cubs, they win a baseball game. They beat the Detroit Tigers, much thanks to their bullpen, too. I was watching the game and it was 3-3 late, and I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, oh, God, this is not going to end well, because I had picked the Tigers to win the game. And I was, you know, having a friendly bet with some buddies. And I said, you know what? The Tigers are going to win this game. Cubs were giving them some trouble. It got to the later innings. And it was a tie game, 3-3. And it went to the Cubs bullpen. And I felt very confident that I was not going to have to pay for dinner tonight. And then, you know, the Cubs, much to my pleasure, actually, they pulled it out. And they were able to hold down the Tigers. So the Cubs win last night, 4-3. And that's where we'll start the Windy City Roundup today. Recapping the win... Chicago, not necessarily going enormous places here this season, and nobody's really expecting that, but when you get wins like this against the Tigers, albeit a struggling Tigers team, you know, with the firepower that they have and the fact that the Tigers are going to catch fire at some point, you know, these wins feel good. And it's not like the Cubs had to come back either. The Cubs really had to dig themselves out of a hole. I mean, they were winning 3-1, and they give up, you know, all these runs in the 7th and the 8th inning. Couldn't really have a whole lot of faith that Chicago was going to pull this out. But hey, they do 4-3. They win. They move to 28-1-40 on the season. Darwin Barney had a pretty impressive game last night. But I want to talk about the bullpen for a second here, because they actually were able to do their job. Looking at the Twins series this weekend, it was just ugly watching Chicago try to come in and try to get things done, especially in that first game. It was not something that you want to write home about, and I say it's great to have the kids out there at the game and get them to watch the fundamentals of baseball, but you should probably cover their eyes when the Chicago Cubs bullpen comes out. Because eating glass is about moderately a better option than having to watch that bullpen go to work. But they are able to get it done last night. Coleman, Russell, Marmol, and Camp all come in. They are able to pretty much hold everything down. Russell, Marmol, and Camp actually come in and don't give up any runs. Camp here, the closer, I want to point out, because seems what he likes to do is give up runs, but he comes in for an inning of work. Doesn't get any strikeouts. The strikeouts were had by Russell out of the bullpen. But Chicago, the big thing that they really had to kind of work on was getting the later innings not to be so tense. And I think that they moved a little bit closer to doing that last night against Detroit, because the Tigers, like I said, they're going to get hot at some point in this season. And you look at their schedule, and although it's interleague play right now, when you have the type of bats that Detroit has, and you look at the type of pitching that Chicago has going out there, specifically in the later innings, you know, Miguel Cabrera, Prince Fielder, these are guys that you don't want your less than satisfyingly great pitchers pitching against, and the Cubs were able to pull it out last night. Darwin Barney, though,
want to talk about him for a second here.
He goes 1-for-3 last night, which, when you look at it, if you're just looking at the box scores and you're that type of analyst, doesn't look like it's that great of a night, but he's able to get 3 RBIs, and considering the Cubs scored 4 runs, I'd say that that's a pretty damn good night for Darwin Barney. And he's a guy who, in the Cubs rebuilding, because they're in a rebuilding period here, and if you're not acknowledging that, you're obviously in denial about it. The Cubs, they're going to have a fire sale come the trade deadline and come this offseason. And Darwin Barney is a guy that you're going to have to watch. And the front office is going to have to make some decisions on how much they value him. Talking to Bob Brenly from the WGN broadcast for the Cubs, he said that he's confirming what I'm suspecting here. He said that, yeah, the Cubs, they're going to have a fire sale like you've never seen before. That's what he said. He took it a step further. He said, this is a fire sale that you have not seen and probably won't see for a very long time in baseball when it comes to the Cubs' assets and what they're willing to give up. He said the only two untouchable Cubs when this whole fire sale thing happens, both at the trade deadline and then into the offseason, the only two guys that won't be moving are Jeff Samardzija and Starlin Castro. And after Samardzija's outing in Minnesota on Saturday, I'm not going to use that and say, oh yeah, Samardzija's going to go, but you know, he's kind of really got to step it up, because it's obvious that the Cubs, they're going to be moving a lot of pieces this offseason. And you have minimal amount of time to prove your worth to be on this team. Samardzija's a guy that you're going to have to watch down the stretch to see how he pitches. And, you know, you got to give him some slack, too. He's coming into his own here. And if the Cubs really are going to try to make him the ace of this staff or something close to that, there's going to be growing pains involved. And we're going to have to endure outings like the one on Saturday against the Twins. So then, you know, a couple years down the road, he's going to be a guy like Dempster, where you come in and you have complete faith that things are going to work out. And hopefully by then, you're going to have a defense behind him and some offense to spark and support. So things are looking up for the Cubs, but the fire sale is something to look forward to. And Darwin Barney, he goes 1-for-3 last night with 3 RBIs. But how much is he valued by the Cubs? That's something that we're going to have to look at moving forward here, because Castro and Samardzija are untouchable. And looking down the roster, other than that, I really don't see a whole lot of guys that I can say with, you know, a lot of faith that they're going to be here come next season. Now, guys that could move at the deadline quickly here while we're finishing up talking about the Cubs, obviously everybody's talking about Ryan Dempster moving. That's a move that I see making a whole lot of sense for Chicago, because he's in the last year of his contract. But at the same time, you have to look at it from the perspective of other teams. How good is Ryan Dempster really? I mean, yes, he's the ace on the staff of Chicago, but really, how difficult is that? Look at his competition. It's not that hard. And that's not taking anything away from Ryan Dempster, because he's a hell of a pitcher. But to be the ace of the staff on the Cubs on the north side, that doesn't take a whole lot. But Dempster is really kind of owning that ace of the staff title, and to move him to another team and bring in pieces for the future, he's even said that that's a good idea. He's been quoted many times saying that, you know, if it's what's best for the team, I'm willing to do that. Which is kind of backhanded, because it's not, you know, yes, he's been here for 9 years, but that's about 100 years in Cubs years. And to say that if it's in the best interest of the team to move, you know, I can do that, you know, who's going to say no to, you know, moving to a contending team? And then it also helps the team that you know, put your blood and sweat in for 9 years. You know, that's a win-win, really. Kind of backhand, but you know, you can understand where Dempster's coming from, because he's been on this team through thick and thin. And if there's a guy that deserves a serious shot here, it is Dempster. Another guy that could be on the move, obviously, is Alfonso Soriano, because the Cubs, they obviously have putting him in this DH spot. We saw it this weekend in Minnesota. They're auditioning him for American League teams that are going to want to make a run at the playoffs. And it's too bad that this series really isn't in Detroit, because there's no better team, and I don't know what Detroit really has in terms of prospects and assets to give up. But could you imagine if Alfonso Soriano's bat, especially that it's hot now with the home runs that he's hitting, could you imagine Alfonso Soriano's bat on the Detroit Tigers paired with Prince Fielder and Miguel Cabrera? That is something that I'm pretty sure a lot of American League pitchers are not going to want to sleep well the night before about that. I mean, can you? I would not envy anybody that had to go up against that kind of a lineup. And I know the Tigers are struggling right now, and I know that, you know, it's kind of looking like this huge money spending spree that they went on in the offseason to get Prince Fielder and all this kind of looks like it's backfiring. But it's not. Give it time. It's going to heat up. And, oh, man, if Alfonso Soriano's home run potential is on that team, that would be something that not that the Tigers aren't already kind of over the top as is in terms of talent in that lineup. That would just, you know, that's like the rich getting richer at that point. So, obviously, you know, it doesn't take a genius to know that Soriano and Dempster are two guys that are obviously being shopped by the Cubs brass. But keep an eye on the entire roster. If you're not named Castro and you're not named Zamarja, there's no guarantee that you're going to be in the north side come next season. And that comes with the territory. That comes with the growing pains that the Cubs are having. So the Cubs, they win 4-3 last night. They get the Tigers again in Chicago tonight. I kind of want to pick the Cubs after that series that they or the game that they had last night. But I'm not going to get too ambitious about what Chicago can do because this seems like the type of series that the Tigers are really going to want to use to heat up. But, you know, you got Garza going on Wednesday night against Porcello. And maybe the Tigers are just running into the Cubs at a bad time because I think the Cubs really stole one away from them last night. They got Garza going on the hill tonight. Albeit he's 2-4 on the season, he's got an ERA that's almost 4. Garza's the type of guy, and I don't want to see him go. If there's a guy on this roster that is being shopped around that I really want to keep, it's Garza. I love Garza. I think that if he's on the staff with Zamarja and they can get some other young pitchers to fill in the other roles around him, you can have a really solid rotation. And you can build it around Garza. Garza can be the ace now while you bring up Zamarja to be the ace of the future if that's really what you want to do. And it's sounding like, you know, talking to Bob Brenly, that's what the Cubs really kind of want to do. But keep Garza here. He can be the ace of the staff. He can kind of, you know, be the bridge between Dempster and Zamarja. And I think you can get some good years out of Garza. That being said, you know, the Blue Jays, they've historically had some pretty good prospects in their farm system. And they're eyeing Matt Garza pretty hard. And so if the right deal comes around, I guess I'm going to have to, you know, just go with the flow. There's nothing you can really do to stop these players from being traded. I just think it would be a good idea to keep Garza on this team. That being, you know, a trade will eventually happen. And Garza's 2-4 record, you know, the ERA is almost 4. Not doing a whole lot to impress people. Because if you are going to want him to be that ace of the staff, you're definitely going to want to have a little bit better of a record than that. But we're going to see how he goes tonight against a pretty potent Detroit Tigers lineup. And Porcello, Rick Porcello for the Tigers, we've seen him pitch, you know, moderately well this season. You know, he's 3-4. His ERA is over 5. But when you're facing the Cubs, whose bat's very hot and cold, it's going to be a very interesting night to see. That's at 7:05 tonight at Wrigley Field. Porcello versus Garza and the Cubs. Cubs win last night 4-3, looking to make it 2 in a row in this series against the Tigers. We can catch you on the flip side here this break. We're going to talk about the Bears. Matt Forte, obviously, going into this offseason and sticking into this offseason with a lot of talk about his contract. And then, of course, we're going to get some updates on the Chicago Bulls and touch on the White Sox, who also won last night. Dual winners in Chicago last night in baseball. It's the Windy City Roundup Fan-Sided Radio Network. Hey, Cubs fans, you like hearing about the Cubs? You like reading about the Cubs? We know you like the Cubs. Head over to CubbyCrids.com to check out all the best Chicago Cubs news on the internet. Even if the Cubs aren't winning, it's always a good time to check out the Chicago Cubs. They got a great site over there, a great staff. They cover the Cubs like glue, and you're going to want to stick to it just the same. Even if the Cubs aren't going anywhere this season, you're going to want to say that you've been there from the beginning when they win that World Series in a couple of years. CubbiesCrib.com, make it your place to go for Chicago Cubs news. Welcome back in Windy City Roundup with Josh Hill. I am Josh Hill, editor at PippinAndEasy.com. Talked about the Cubs and their 4-3 win over the Tigers last night. I want to shift down to the south side because the White Sox, they also won last night. And they're actually good. You know, I love my Cubs. I really do, and I hate to put them down all the time because it seems like it's a popular thing to do. But, you know, the White Sox, they're actually in first place. And they kind of got a huge break from the Cubs. A little cross-town help with the Cubs beating the Tigers last night. Because although the Tigers kind of struggling thus far, they're the real competition for the White Sox. And they're the overall favorite to come out of the AL Central. So the White Sox, they're getting a lot of help from the Cubs last night. And they do themselves a lot of help. Beating the Cardinals last night 6-1. Anytime you beat the Cardinals, it's a good thing. I mean, ever since Albert Pujols left for Los Angeles, it almost seems like it takes some zing away from the Cardinals. But they still got that lineup, and it's still pretty good. And the White Sox were able to get in there. They go to Busch Stadium, win in St. Louis 6-1 last night. Quintana was the pitcher. He goes 5 1/3, gives up 10 hits. He's credited with the win, though. And then, of course, you go to the bullpen for Chicago. And the south side bullpen, a little bit better than the one on the north side. In fact, a lot better than the one on the north side. You know, you get Jesse Crane coming in there. And, of course, Addison Reed closes it out for Chicago. Doesn't get credited with the save. Thornton and Jones get credited with holds. Matt Thornton's 10th hold of the season. He goes an inning. He gets one strikeout. But White Sox get the win in St. Louis last night, and they beat Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright drops to 5-7 on the season. He goes 7 full, gives up 5 hits, 2 runs, 2 earned, and strikes out 7. He threw 99 pitches last night. Quintana, he only pitched 76. And so Chicago relied a little bit more heavily on their bullpen. Gordon Beckham is a guy that, you know, the Cubs on the north side, they have Starlin Castro. He's their big infielder, and he's really their big star moving forward. I like to think of Gordon Beckham on the south side. He plays second base, you know. Not that there's a whole lot of correlation between, you know, Castro and Beckham, but the only one that I see is that Beckham, moving forward here, can be the true star for the White Sox. You've had Konerko forever. I mean, God, I remember watching Konerko when I was growing up watching baseball. So Konerko, he's been a staple in Chicago, and obviously he wasn't going anywhere. He's going to finish his career here. But you need another guy like Konerko who's going to be a staple. And what was interesting about Konerko is that he was never really a true superstar. He was never an Albert Pujols type of guy. He was never, you know, Derek Jeter or any of these huge superstars. I like to think of Paul Konerko like Jim Thome, where he's, you know, the quiet giant who comes in, gets the job done, isn't really splashy and flashy about what he does, but there's production there, and there is production behind what Konerko did, and he brings a credibility and a sort of intimidation to the team, and a face, almost. And Konerko, more so, is the face than Thome ever was of any of the teams Thome was on, except maybe in Cleveland, when Thome was in Cleveland. But he was there at a time when they had a lot of great guys, you know, Manny Ramirez, and I think David Justice was there for a while. But Gordon Beckham is a guy moving forward here that can really become the new face of Chicago, and we're starting to see it, and obviously, you know, a lot of people are already looking at him that way. But as Konerko starts to fade into the twilight here, in the twilight years of his career and fade into the sunset, Beckham can really step up and make this his team. You know, you see it in basketball. Everybody wants a point guard because that makes it their team. And you see it in football all the time, except that, you know, the positions are interchangeable. But in baseball, you really need a face of the team. You look at teams that are winners. There's usually a face to the team. And I think Gordon Beckham here has a real opportunity to come into his own more so than he already has. He goes 1-for-4 last night. His RBI comes in a big eighth inning for the White Sox, where they basically close out St. Louis in that eighth inning. They get runs 3, 4, 5, and 6 in the eighth inning. 6-1 is your final last night. The White Sox moving to 34-27 on the season. The Cardinals, they dropped to 500, 31-31, 14-14 at home. The White Sox, they stay hot on the road. 18-9 on the road so far this season for Chicago. Taking a look at what they got going tonight in Busch Stadium, they go at it again. You got Jake Peavy for Chicago and Lynn going for St. Louis. Lance Lynn, 9-2 on the season. He got a couple of aces going. Jake Peavy, 6-1, 3.05 ERA. But Lance Lynn, 9-2 with an ERA under 3. 2.66 is his ERA. Lynn could give Chicago some trouble here. He was a contributor out of the bullpen last year during that World Series run. He moved into the rotation when Chris Carpenter went out with that shoulder injury he had in March. So, definitely a guy making the most of an opportunity, 9-2. He's allowed 3 runs or fewer in 11 of his 12 starts, and he struck out 74. 74 batters in 74 and a third. So the guy is obvious. He's burning batters down. So Chicago's going to have a little bit of a difficult time here. But they get one last night, which gets them up in the American League Central. Obviously, the Cubs helping them out by beating the Tigers, who are in third place. But the Cleveland Indians are the team right now that Chicago wants to watch. Right now, Chicago in first place with 34-27. But the Indians, they're a game and a half back. That's the team that Chicago, and nobody really thought that you were going to have to watch the Indians. Who thought you were going to have to watch Cleveland of all teams? Everybody thought it was going to be Detroit and Cleveland or Detroit and Chicago. Detroit's 6 games out right now. They're below 500. They're 28-33. And I'm not saying that Detroit's going anywhere dark and gloomy and brooding, but they're 6 games out. They're 28-33. The Kansas City Royals are 25-34. They're 8 games out of first place. They're 2 games behind the Detroit Tigers. And the Minnesota Twins, who put a beatdown on the Philadelphia Phillies last night, they are 8.5 games out of first place in the Central, which means that they're just 2.5 games behind the Tigers. So, you know, definitely, and the AL Central historically has been very bumpy this time of year. You know, it kind of, everybody thinks that they see the winner, the clear-cut winner coming out of the Central in April and May, and I always say that that's the stupidest notion that you can have. In the division that is so topsy-turvy, and yes, the Twins have come out of it, you know, what, 6 of the last 10 years. But there's always a race to the finish. And Chicago usually is on the short end of that stick, but they're in some way involved in a race to the finish. So don't assume anything here. And I'm not just talking about Chicago and Cleveland. I'm talking about watch out, not necessarily Kansas City, because if there's one thing that's guaranteed, Kansas City starts out looking like they're going to make things interesting, and then they just kind of sink into obscurity. But watch out for the Twins. You know, they started out rough, and they're starting to come around. They're very good in interleague play under Ron Gardenhire. And the Tigers, they are playing the Cubs. They may have lost last night, but let's not lose sight of the fact that they are playing the Chicago Cubs. And that's pretty much a game that you always have a good chance of winning. But right now, the White Sox, they're watching the Cleveland Indians. And the Cleveland Indians, they get the Cincinnati Reds last night. They lose 7-1, so that helps out Chicago as well. But tonight, if you are interested in seeing the closest competition for the Chicago White Sox right now in the Cleveland Indians, they get the Cincinnati Reds tonight. Joey Votto, 2-run homer last night for Cincinnati. I'm liking the Cincinnati Reds winning this game again. Could get rained out, though. You know, lots of rain in the forecast tonight across the board for baseball games. But the Indians, 32-28, remain a game and a half behind the White Sox, so ground can be made on the south side. On the flip side of the break here, we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about the Chicago Bears and Matt Forte. Talk about an ugly situation in and around Soldier Field. Got a guy who looked like he was going to get a fat contract extension. ACL, we all know that that has not been kind to Chicago. It definitely has not been kind to Matt Forte, because it's going to take him a big hit in the checkbook and in the pocket, in the wallet, all those cliches. Matt Forte thought he was getting paid. Not so much. We'll give you a little bit of insight on how that is going. That is what's next on the Windy City Roundup here on Fansided Radio Network. Hey, Chicago, do you love the Bulls? Well, if you do, you're going to head over to PippinAin'tEasy.com and make it your number one place to go for Chicago Bulls news. Got a great staff, got great news, great content, regularly give away free things, and who doesn't like free things? It is PippinAin'tEasy.com, your number one source for the best Chicago Bulls news out there. All right, welcome into the final segment here on the Windy City Roundup Fansided Radio Network. I am Josh Hill, talking about the Chicago Bears and Matt Forte. We've seen it so many times in the past here in the NFL. You've got a player who has an outstanding season, and then he holds out the next season, rightfully so, especially if he has a bad contract. You've never seen a guy with a good contract hold out. But it's usually a guy who's getting close to his contract year or who is in his contract year. He holds out for more money. We saw Chris Johnson do it last season. And, you know, he's not the first guy. Darrell Revis, I believe, is about to do it again, the second time in 3 years in New York. But Matt Forte was a guy that looked like he was going to be able to hold out and get a nice fat contract from Chicago. But instead, he gets a little bit of bad luck. Injuries abound for him, and now it's an issue that the Bears now have a little bit of leverage to not pay him. Forte, he skips the Bears minicamp. That's no surprise, but that's the big headline for the Bears right now. He's got the, you know, all of this coming at him at once with the injury and the contract. You know, he hasn't signed the $7.74 million tender. That's the drama at the moment right now for the Bears. Forte has until July 16th to agree to a multi-year deal with more money, okay? He's not required to attend minicamp because he's not under contract. And Lovie Smith, he's saying that he's having a blast coaching the players. But, well, that's at least according to a Sports Illustrated article that's up today. But he wouldn't say if Forte's situation is going to be resolved now, if it's going to be resolved in training camp, it's going to be resolved closer to the season, if there's going to be a significant portion of the season that he misses, because we saw Michael Crabtree a couple years ago held out into the season, albeit he was a draft pick and that was an incredibly stupid idea. It was not outside the realm of possibilities that that may be what Forte does, because he wants to get paid. And this is an interesting situation because you have Forte who gets injured. He's having a great season. He gets injured. Everybody's talking about pay the man now, pay the man now. He gets injured, basically giving Chicago's excuses, saying, well, you know, damaged goods, we're not going to pay you. You know, the old, you know, the cocky, condescending excuse of, we were going to pay you so much money because you were just such a great asset, but you're damaged goods now, so now we're going to have to bump it down, and you're going to come at a discount. So it's that kind of, you know, backhanded compliment, you know, snidey, snooty type of thing coming down from Chicago. But they want him on the team because he's an ace running back, okay? He's an elite guy, and we've seen backs come back from ACL injuries before. and knee injuries and those, you know, lower body injuries. Take a look at Adrian Peterson. Same division. Gruesome injury that he suffers, and he's going to be ready, it looks like, for, you know, opening Sunday in the NFL. So Forte now is looking at that and saying, well, look how fast he recovered. Who's to say that I'm not going to come back and do that exact same thing? Albeit, you know, Peterson signed his deal at a prime time. You know, he signs it before last season, doesn't get injured until a meaningless game at the end of the season, which still boggles my mind. And it would have been really unfortunate if it would have severely cut into his career. Obviously, it's looking like that's not the case. But with Forte, he didn't have that deal in place. And the Bears now have the excuse of the injury to not pay him. And now the question is, when is Forte going to rejoin the team with his contract? And it's very frustrating for Bears fans, because Forte is a weapon on the offense. Last year, he was the weapon. There really wasn't anything outside of Matt Forte. But now, you know, you bring in Brandon Marshall, you draft Ashon Jeffries. This offense for Chicago, this is going to be, you know, it's going to give defenses problems. And adding Matt Forte into that mix only makes it even more dangerous. But without him, and I don't want to say it's going to ruin the offense and make it more predictable, but you're not doing yourself any favors when you take your running back out of the backfield because you refuse to pay him a contract. You know, the term one-dimensional starts to come to mind. Who are you going to have running out of the backfield? You know, Marion Barber's gone. The Bears don't have a whole lot of attractive options in that backfield right now. It's going to be kind of a one-note type thing. You know, you got Michael Bush. That's great. But he's a great filler guy. Michael Bush is like an Ernest Graham type player, where he comes in and he's kind of a bit guy. He's the Nick Punto of running backs. He comes in, he gets the job done, but he's never going to be a star. He's never going to be a guy that's going to carry your offense, especially from a running standpoint. So, yes, it's great to have him back there, but is that really the type of mindset you want to have coming into a season where you can do some serious damage? Because Chicago, last season, if it wasn't for the Derrick Rose-like injury to Jay Cutler, you know, breaks the thumb, and then Matt Forte goes down, and, you know, that derails the season that was looking absolutely good. You know, Chicago's riding that high into this season. They know they can do it, and they want to go back, and they want to get to that point and then not suffer the injuries. Matt Forte was a big part of that, and you're not going to replace his production with that of Michael Bush. And on that same note, you're not going to have the type of production from Brandon Marshall and Ashon Jeffries and maybe to an extent Devin Hester. And if Johnny Knox can come back, which it doesn't look like he's going to be able to come back anytime soon after that nasty back injury that he had. You've got these receivers out here that you're expecting to carry the team and, you know, bring it into a different type of Chicago Bears style of offense we haven't seen before. You're not going to be able to do that if that's what the defenses are expecting. Jay Cutler, not that type of quarterback. Take a look at Michael Vick. Okay? Michael Vick comes in after his prison sentence for the Eagles, sits a season, watches. Then he comes back in, plays against defenses that have either forgotten what it was like to play him or have never played him before. And all of a sudden, you've got this almost throwback retro style of quarterbacking. You know, Michael Vick. It's like, you know, those Madden games that they have where you can play Barry Sanders from the 1991 season in, you know, the 2012 season. It was the 2004-2005 Michael Vick playing in the 2011 NFL. And defenses weren't ready for it. But what happened? They figured it out. They knew how to play against them, and they roughed them up last season. Jay Cutler is not the type of quarterback that is going to be consistent. We've seen it too many times in his career. Okay, we saw it in Denver, and we've seen it in Chicago. He likes to throw interceptions. It's what he does. He's Jay Cutler. We've accepted that. It comes with the territory of having Jay Cutler as your quarterback. So to expect him to be able to do what he did last season without Matt Forte, to me that's a pretty naive standpoint, and that's a bit ignorant to be thinking that. Because Jay Cutler was Jay Cutler last season because Matt Forte was Matt Forte. I mean, it's math. It's basic, you know, algebra here. You take out the variable of Matt Forte, all of a sudden you have Jay Cutler being Jay Cutler. And you're going to rely on him to go deep, and then you have him overthrowing receivers, and then you have him thrown to the wrong team. You know, that's obviously a worst-case scenario, but to expect the Bears to be what they were last season with Matt Forte, without Matt Forte, that, you know, in no universe does that make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. So, Matt Forte, injured, you know, get over it, Chicago. He needs to be paid. Who are you going to get in that running back? If they didn't go in the draft, okay, there's no attractive free agent options. Obviously, because you brought in Michael Bush. Whoa, you know, lightened up. Matt Forte needs to be back on this team. And he needs to be paid. Take a risk. Take a chance. Chicago is not a struggling franchise, okay? And it's not going to be one of the worst decisions that they've ever made. We've seen them make plenty of bad decisions over the, you know, the course of the past 10 years. And I know, you know, Emery coming in, he doesn't want to make a bad first impression. He doesn't really want to start out with a bad, you know, taste in his mouth, on the bad foot, whatever. But that's kind of what he's doing here. He's backing himself into a corner by not paying Matt Forte. And it's almost looking like a situation where he doesn't want to look like he's being bullied by a player. And that's rightfully so. You as a GM never want to allow your players to push you around. But, you know, you've got to meet each other halfway here. No, Forte should not get the amount of money that he was going to get, you know, the middle of last season before he went down. No way should he get that type of money. But should the Bears lowball him? No way. He doesn't deserve that. He earned a certain amount of money last season by doing what he did. Okay? You're not bargain shopping here with Matt Forte. He will walk away, and there will be a team that will pay him money. There's no other way around that. And it's just boggling my mind to think that the Bears can move forward with this without Matt Forte in the backfield. The defense is getting old. The monsters of the midway era, it's over. It's done. They maybe have a couple of moderately good years left in them with Urlacher kind of, you know, riding things out. But this is, we're seeing, obviously, with the trades for Brandon Marshall and the drafting of Ashlon Jeffries and improving the offensive line in the previous two first rounds, Chicago is moving into an offensive era. Just like all teams in the NFL, it's the fantasy football Madden era of the NFL, where, you know, teams want to score 50 points a game. And Chicago wants to do that. But, interesting that you want to do that, but you're going to take the most vital and versatile part of your offense off the field in Matt Forte. Because it's not Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler is not the X factor here. If you don't have Matt Forte in that backfield, don't expect any of this to work as smoothly as everybody's expecting it to. And if it does, if it ends up working that way by some, you know, slide of a miracle, that's great, that's wonderful, I won't complain. But right now, I am going to complain my ass off. Because Matt Forte not in that backfield, that equation doesn't match up to me. And it doesn't come out to anything close to a Super Bowl run for Chicago, if you just have Jay Cutler throwing to receivers. He had a receiving corps not unlike this in Denver for a few years, and nobody remembers Denver's records when Jay Cutler was there. They didn't go to any Super Bowls, they didn't make any deep runs. Yes, he was a young quarterback, but he's done nothing to really show that he's moved away from his interception totals. Last year was a nice improvement, but really have to think how much that was Matt Forte's graces. Because he was in that backfield, and defenses had to compensate the hell out of him. And not so much if he's not there. Michael Bush scares absolutely no one. I want to go up against an offense that has Michael Bush in the backfield. Because you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit there and let my cornerbacks do all the job. And if Michael Bush comes my way, I'm just going to, you know, trip him or something. Because he's not that dangerous of a running back. But if Matt Forte's back there, there's a whole lot of things that are going on. And the NFC is getting better and better and better. You look at the NFC South with Drew Brees and Josh Freeman and Matt Ryan and Cam Newton and the offenses that they have. Those are offenses that win. Take a look at New Orleans. Drew Brees, great quarterback. He's got a backfield, and he's got receivers kind of like Chicago, where there's one big guy and then kind of bit guys around him. Look at Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's got Josh Freeman, who had a very bad season last year, but he's got number one receiver. Actually, I think Tampa Bay has the best receiving core in the NFC because, you know, they've got Vincent Jackson and Mike Williams, all this, but they have a running back. They have two of them. Doug Martin out of Boise State, who they took in the first round, and they've got LeGarrette Blount. Take a look at Carolina. Cam Newton has one big receiving target, one big number one, Steve Smith. He's got two running backs. Okay? Same thing's going on in Atlanta with Matt Ryan, and he's got his receivers, and then Michael Turner in the backfield. Are you getting what I'm saying here? Are you seeing the correlation between these teams? They win, or in Tampa Bay and Carolina's case, they have the potential to win, but they only have that because they have a rounded offense. And if you take Matt Forte out of this offense, don't expect things to work. Okay? Don't come into this season with the high expectations that you would have if Forte's in the backfield. Don't pretend like he is if he's not. Pay Matt Forte what he deserves, not what he wants. Careful how you listen to that. Not what he wants, what Matt Forte deserves. Don't lowball him. Don't overpay him. Give him what he deserves. Get him in the backfield. Get this team rounded so it can compete with the Lions and the Packers and, to a certain extent, the Vikings in the division, let alone the entire NFC, and then there's the AFC to worry about. Pay Matt Forte what he deserves. Come on, Chicago. You know you want to, and you know you have to win. We're going to wrap up the show here on the other side of this break. It's the Windy City Roundup on Fansided Radio Network. The Kings, they won the Stanley Cup the other night, but just because the hockey season is over doesn't mean you have a good excuse not to go to BlackHawkUp.com. It's your number one source for Chicago Blackhawk news and analysis. They got a great staff over there. They give you the best Blackhawks news that they can, and it's the place that I go to get all of my Blackhawks news. BlackHawksUp.com. Go there or be square. Or a Canucks fan. And you don't want to be a Canucks fan, trust me. All right, if you missed anything, of course, the show is absolutely positively podcastable. Head over to iTunes, search in the store, go to Pippin Ain't Easy. That is going to give you all of the shows, not only the Windy City Roundup, but you've got shows about the Bulls on there. Didn't get a chance to talk any Bulls today, because there's really nothing to talk about. We've got some great stuff up on the site, though, if you do want to catch up on the Bulls. Because there's never a shortage of Bulls news. I mean, we've still got stuff up about the Steve Nash, Jason Kidd debate. Whether or not they're coming to Chicago. And second of all, which one would be better should they come to Chicago. Also, up is great stuff about, we of course, the season review and contract stuff. Who's coming back to Chicago? We don't know. C.J. Watson, Ronnie Brewer, Kyle Korver, all guys that are very well done in Chicago. Great article up right now on that. Of course, the NBA draft is coming up, ramping up coverage on that. So Pippin Ain't Easy. It's never a short order of Bulls news. Make that your number one stop for all the Chicago Bulls news. So we talked Cubs. We talked Sox. Both of them win last night. Both of them go tonight. Sox get the Cardinals in St. Louis, and the Cubs get the Tigers in Detroit. Garza goes for the Cubbies on the north side. And in St. Louis, Jake Peavy goes for the Southsiders. First place are the White Sox, and the Cubs can help them remain there by sinking the Tigers. Talked about Matt Forte and his contract, how the Bears need to pay him. So if you want to listen to any of that, it is all podcastable. No guests today. We're going to have guests hopefully tomorrow. I'm Josh Hill. This has been the Windy City Roundup on Fansided Radio Network. We'll catch you next time, folks. When I come around.